It's the Elaborators. My name's Justin. I'm part of your WBC crew that bring you all of the suite of, I don't know, what are we doing? Are we adding anything to our suite of things, Producer Simon?
We could do.
Yeah, what
how
would
about,
you like to add?
How about something analog? What about like letters? Ooh,
letters?
Yeah.
We could just start writing letters to people?
Yeah, I could start printing a newsletter again.
Oh, wow.
And posting it in the mail to people.
I love that.
Daily.
Oh, that's... I don't think there's enough stamps left anymore.
Well, I'll use the AI chats.
Nice.
They can write my newsletters. Oh, I guess it's a no-go.
Anyway, look, let's get the crowd in. Let's get the crowd involved because apart from needing another angle other than the Elaborators, we thought we'd invite Pastor D to the studio today. G'day, my friend.
Ooh, hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm really good.
You're looking fresh. You're looking like you've sorry. For all of those who are not watching the YouTube version of this, she just pulled a 90s dance move to use the word fresh. I like it. Can we... Yeah, no. I was looking for more of a chicka chicka wah, some sort of
bit of Fresh Prince.
Going on. I don't think I've got anything like that.
So this is the story all about how. No, I won't go there.
Just go the Angels.
Okay.
Bel Air is not as fresh as Fresh Prince.
Although when I play this sound effect, if you want a 90s reference, Mr. Bean dropping from the sky.
Very much.
Right. So put that.
Hello.
Hello.
It's my flexible friend.
Bean.
Well, we've gotten off to an absolute corker of a... We're back. This is the Elaborators episode...
16.
And over the weekend at WBC, we were talking about money, 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 money. Something like that. I thought Dee was going to join in then. I really did. I didn't. I thought that the 90s dance moves were going to come
money.
Out.
Missed the cue.
I missed it.
We're talking about money. We're talking about giving. And we're talking about what it means to the Christian person to actually give. Giving stuff away. Not just earning, but giving stuff away. Now, Simo, Producer Simon, over to you. You are a kind soul.
Thank you.
Yeah. It comes up on your LinkedIn.
Butter me up.
Comes up on your LinkedIn profile. Yep. I'm a really nice person. Categorized under nice. We'll just get stuck into it. I thought what we could do for everybody listening and participating, we'd go around the room and just say, what's your kind of habit been in your faith journey of giving? Has it been one of giving directly into your local church as you're the fundamental thing? Has it been giving to organizations? When the preacher stands up and says, you should give, what happens in your brain? There you go. That's the quickest question I can ask. What happens in your brain? Because right now when I'm talking to people and I say, hey, everyone, we're going to talk about giving and being a Christian and church life, explosions are going off in people's heads and they're about to write letters to the editor, Sim. That's what they're going to do.
Yep.
So the preacher stands up and says to the congregation, but specifically to Simon because that's who this sermon is aimed at. Simon, you should give. What happens in your head? What does it mean to you when the preacher says that?
Sure. Well, right now I do give regularly, so I guess I don't necessarily feel guilt there. Mm-hmm. I guess it would depend on how hard that pastor pushed how much I am giving.
Okay.
And second, how generous I should be.
Follow-up question. Preacher goes too hard. What happens for you? Do you go, no? Is there a point where you're like, okay, preacher, stop it now?
Oh, yeah, I'd say that, yes. And that probably happens on many topics, not just the giving topic.
That's just the giving topic.
Yeah, yeah.
Melchizedek.
I think I probably go to how the room is feeling. Like, is this a bit too much for the rest of the people in the room?
Right.
Potentially unchurched or anything like that that might be in the space as well.
Yeah. So, but in general, giving your money away, not such a big deal, something your family has done forever?
No, I think I couldn't say that. I wasn't in those conversations with my parents. I guess that didn't come across necessarily. Other than they were, they had a very open home. They were very generous. Yep. I don't know about the finances of it all.
So the follow-up question, I'll ask this to Dee as well, is was money an open conversation in your home growing up?
No, not to me. I don't necessarily think it was hidden.
Mm.
I think it was just mum and dad did the mum and dad stuff.
Yep. But you weren't saying, hey, Mum, what's our house worth and how much money do you earn?
No,
and
those my kids
things.
Certainly do.
And next thing because I feel like that is a generational change. My children who are 6 through 17 frequently will ask how much I earn, what our house is worth, what the car's worth. Those sorts of questions are really common. And Dee's shaking her head. We'll jump over here because I'll ask you the same questions. That would feel awkward if your children were asking you that?
I mean, it would seem unusual. They would. My children always asked for expensive things when they were kids.
And you're like, we can't afford them. We live in a hole in the ground. You're lucky you are. You don't. No, sorry.
Oh, I mean, like skateboards and skater pants and skate shoes and I don't know.
There's a lot of skating going on at your house, right?
And that stuff was expensive back in the day.
You know what you want to get into? Musical instruments.
Oh, yeah, we did that too.
Did you do that? Oh, my goodness. Anyway. So, but your children, you can just tell us from your perspective as a mum, was that an open conversation with the kids?
We tried to teach them financial responsibility. So mm-hmm. then we would give them certain money. And Stan was Stan would use money to motivate. And so did I, actually, when I think about it, because I homeschooled. And so I wanted them to read, so I would pay them per page. You know?
Really?
Yeah, I did.
Wow. I want to get involved in your program.
It's like the reverse higher education going on there.
I was
going
to say the best thing we got in my school was like house points if we read 5 pages.
Yeah, no.
And house points in the end weren't worth that much.
Or merits.
Yeah. Merits. Did you get the merits?
And demerits.
You got the
couple.
Producer Simon, revelations.
It was known.
Good Simon.
Demerits.
Sorry, everyone.
Yeah, so we were talking about these motivations. You would use money as a motivation. Good idea, bad idea in retrospect.
Well, I think that it was an important thing, as long as it was balanced, if I can say it that way, because they need to learn how to manage it. Because once you get to be an adult and you have to manage money. If you do it poorly, you get yourself in a bad place. You know, you dig a hole for yourself and stuff like that. But if you learn to manage it well, so it was part of the training and raising of our kids is to help them learn how to think through, you know, this is how much I have, this is what I want, and how do you work through that and stuff. I think all parents do that, don't they?
At some level or another. Yeah. Again, I would say based on your skill set. It's not my skill set, so I can teach them how to play a scale. not so good with teaching them how to, you know, invest in Bitcoin. But
neither am I. What is a Bitcoin? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, that's producer Simon's effort. But again,
I pretend to know.
Okay, that's good.
Growing up for you, Dee, was it talked about in your household growing up?
Only that in the sense that we can't afford it, we can't afford it, we can't afford it.
Yeah. Which changes how you raise. If you believe that you can't afford things, it changes how you think about money, right?
Yeah. Or you don't need it, or, you know, that was the kind of mentality. And that, remember I said on Sunday that my dad was a bit of frugal. He was frugal because he grew up in a big family, a farming family. They weren't wealthy and stuff like that. Not highly educated or anything.
Yeah.
So, in a family of 10 kids, my dad would tell stories about how they would share. 3 siblings would have a birthday close together and they would get 1 gift between the 3 of them because that's what money was like for them. So, like, you get into my era and it's like, you know, oh, you don't need that. It's what you need more than what you want. Not that I had to share birthday presents, but.
So the preachers there, they say, you know, you should give into the offering or to this special project. What happens in your head?
I'm really skeptical. It's like, we have our giving plan. Be quiet. And that's, I mean, honestly, that's what I think. Yeah. Like if we go to like a big gathering and stuff like that, we give to the local church, we give to a few missionaries that we support, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Our giving is very planned. And if a need were to come up and they're saying we're raising money for this thing, this project or whatever, or there's a special need that's come up, I would probably be more motivated then.
Yeah.
But just these general appeals to give more and more and more, we'll use it for this, that or the other. I'm a little skeptical about that.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a combination of a personality trait and also something that is your experience over the years. So here's the next question, because again, I feel like anybody listening, watching, participating in this podcast today would have some good experiences and some bad experiences. Certainly I have memories, probably childhood memories, of going to large gatherings where the person up the front was very motivational and potentially was able to manipulate people. to give to something that really was an unsubstantiated claim, or I'm trying to be gentle about it, but basically I did see people in my circle, including my own folks at times, give money to things that really became fruitless or were fruitless. Certainly, you know, the church is pretty famous over the years for some really, really big financial scandals. And so it does change the way you think about giving in general. So have either of you, producer Simon or Dee, had one of those really negative experiences, and has it impacted you the way that you respond to when people say, hey, let's give?
I'm thinking about a couple of movies that I watched in the past that, yeah, you know, actually take the church or like preachers and stuff to task on this. Mm-hmm. There was a Steve Martin movie years ago. Do you?
Yeah.
But it was about, you know, that kind of like a carnival type attitude with that one. And then there's a more recent like TV series that really is making that a big issue, is the money, and it's showing all the cars and the houses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so I think there's this out there perception that that's what it's like. And I can tell you that when I did my studies, I did a paper on the health, wealth, gospel. So it was really, that's not really what it was about, but it was about the Word of Faith movement. And I'm not calling out any movements or anything like that, but I delved really deeply into what several of the denominational preachers were saying, mm-hmm, and their lifestyles and all that stuff, because I needed to do this work that I did. I was a little bit gobsmacked, and I can think, no wonder like Hollywood and stuff like that are taking Christianity to task on that, because of the abuses within the system in some sections, and there's a lot of manipulation that happens.
There's certainly a lot of teaching around who Jesus was. One of the things we don't know is what he owned, what he had, where he lived, all of that. We don't actually get much of a picture. We get the Isaiah prophecy of is a man of no reputation, and he didn't bring anything into this world. And he says, you know, birds of the air and foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. He was very, so some people would say he was just a wandering prophet that was poor and had nothing physical. Others I've heard teach very, very literally that Judas, being the keeper of the money, actually knew how to take the money, and people would tithe and teruma to him and those sorts of words. So there is a really broad, people need to understand, there's a broad range of people taking a microscope to the scriptures to try and figure out what level of lifestyle Jesus had to justify their own. So when you read the words of Jesus, does it impact your sense of how you should live as far as what other people see of you? Does it matter whether you drive an expensive car? Or does that impact you, or has that changed over the years?
No, it's very much, because with a mission life and with a pastoral life, you're life in the fishbowl. That's what they say. It's life in the fishbowl. So everybody's watching what you do. They watch what you wear. I have people comment about what I wear. Oh, I know that's, you know, such and such a you know, label maker.
Do they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Legitimately.
Yeah, and do you get your hair done? Where do you are people your nails
never,
done?
People never ask me where I get my hair done.
Yeah,
people
never ask that. No, the hair, I meant nails.
No, you know?
I guess I don't get my nails done intentionally, because I don't want people to think that, well, one, I don't have time to go every
like
couple
even
weeks.
Now, this is very surprising, even now.
Yeah.
So Simon and I are both surprised by this.
It's in the back of my mind that it's like, I don't want to look like I, you know,
Simon and I are going to get you a Balenciaga jacket for the next time you preach, okay?
Well,
see what happens.
There was that famous Karl Stefanovic thing that he did, you know, Today Show.
Wore the same suit every day?
He wore the same suit for a year, and nobody called him on it. Except for the female hosts.
I guess what we're pointing out is no one's ever commented to me, other than what shoes are those?
Preacher sneakers.
Preacher sneakers. We love a bit of preacher sneakers.
There's a whole Instagram, isn't there? A whole big social media thing. And it's calling preachers out on spending too much money on their sneakers. And, you know, so people are watching and people are evaluating. It's like, oh, you know, even when the church spends money on equipment and stuff like that, they make assumptions like, oh, well, they don't need my money because they must have enough to be spending money on that. And, you know, things like that happens.
But this is what I'm saying. This is the emotional part of it. Whatever level I'm living at, anything above that is considered at some level
excessive.
Yeah. And anything below that is not acceptable.
Yeah.
So depending on your starting point, again, your father, your grandfather compared to your father, compared to your generation, that sort of thing. And every parent wants their children to have it better than they had it. That's just a parent's heart. And you do find
I want my kids to suffer.
We're editing that part and sending that around. No, but what we're saying is that there's we want our children not to, well, let's use that word, not to have to suffer, not to have to go through what we through, not those sorts of things. But then there's lessons to be learned as well.
I would say to you, that's not what I want for my kids. Because I don't think hard times, I have traveled the world and some of the most generous people and the people that are most free with materialism are really impoverished countries. And they are so giving. They will give you their chicken. They won't eat their chicken, but they'll give it to you as a guest. And we were traveling through a church one time, and this lady, you could tell by just looking at her, she didn't have a lot. And she brought me a box as a missionary going through that church, a box of stuff, you know, like household things that she'd gotten through rebating. So she didn't buy the stuff. She, you know, like earned the stuff for free, and then she gave it away rather than keeping it for herself. So it was more, I wanted my kids not to be entrapped by materialism, if that makes sense, because it's a trap. It's a trap.
So check this out. As Jesus looked up, he saw the rich putting their gifts into the temple treasury, and he also saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. Truly, I tell you, he said, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. All these people gave their gifts out of their wealth, but she gave out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. That's Jesus' words from Luke 21. What does that speak to you of?
That it's not about the amount and that Jesus sees us. but yeah, I think often, Stan and I have had this conversation this week because we're talking about the issue and it's like, are we generous? Are we being generous? And how can we change how we're spending? Because what we find is we get into these habits. There's the buzzword. But you know, you're just kind of like, oh, yeah, well, you know, we've got a wine membership or we've got a footy club membership or these things. And we just kind of like go with it. And every so often I get all the emails from all the places that I've ordered stuff for in the past. So then I'm always looking through their sales and buying stuff I don't need and stuff. So we were talking about, do we need to reevaluate this and maybe rebudget because we have enough now? Whereas in the past it was we never had enough, so we were always, you know, relying on God more and stuff.
And let's just explain that season of life you find yourself in now. You both got you're both working, have a wage, and you don't have kids living at the house.
Yeah.
So you're back in that zone of any research will tell you, you're back in that zone of high earning potential and so on and so forth. So, which is a very different position to what you were in 10 years ago.
Right. Or you as raising a family, both of you guys raising
family. I'm basically poor right now, so that's why I'm just wearing a black t-shirt brought to you by H&M.
It's good. I hope you got it on sale. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, certainly did.
Kidding,
always.
Kidding,
always.
Kidding.
People ask me about my shoes. They do. They ask me about my shoes. Yeah. And they, hey, where do you get new shoes? I say DFO for $20.
Well, what's wrong with that?
I'm just frugal.
And also, I like shoes. Some of my mom's hand me downs and some of my kids' hand me downs and stuff like that. I'm not too proud.
Yeah, I was wearing some of my mom's hand me downs, but they told me I shouldn't.
Oh, so you shouldn't do that.
Anyway, back to you.
Back to me about what? About Jesus and the widow.
You're saying you're reevaluating where you're at now. You've actually got enough. So are you feeling like you're more tempted now to buy things you don't need because you've got a bit of more of a surplus now, potentially?
Yeah. And I think that we could be more generous. We are generous with what we give. We've given regularly and stuff like that. But could we be more generous is the thing. Or maybe less self-indulgent. I think that's probably what we're evaluating. Could we be less self-indulgent, and which would enable us to give more?
And I always say to people, if you're even bothering to ask yourself that question, that says something about how you're wired.
Maybe.
I think it does. Because again, we don't want to push people into this guilt thing of you have to give, otherwise everybody, you know, the idea of when I was working for NGOs with Compassion and Christian Blind Mission, there was a change in season between the types of advertising they would put out. So instead of showing poverty and absolute squalor, which through the 80s was very strong, every ad on TV was kind of, here's the absolute squalor. If you don't give today, this child will die. That was essentially the thing. Give up a cup of coffee a day. You get rid of your indulgence and this will happen. Through a number of different things, including people distrusting NGOs, that had to change. And so they started to show things like, here's a child that has been educated. Here's a child that has got a better life. Here's a family that now has a micro business because of the funding. And so they're showing results rather than, you know, so the way we are motivated gets changed over time. And I think, again, for us, when we're standing in church and we understand, for anybody who's leading a church or whatever, you understand that you have to ask people to give. It's part of, you can't run these things without people giving physical cash into the coffers, it doesn't work. So we have to have our hearts in the right place.
Yeah.
When we're, do you find it hard as a minister in the house to ask people to give?
I don't like to talk about money. In fact, when this series came up, I thought, oh no, not giving.
Yeah.
And the more I thought about it, I thought, no, I do want to talk about giving because I think it's such an important part of our spiritual walk, because I do think we become enslaved to that. And we do have this tendency to think it all relies on us. Mm. And I think that's why there are scriptures that remind us that God says, you know, you're working really hard, but I blow on it and it's gone.
Yeah.
And so we need to think about that. And sometimes God uses that to get our attention. I know he did for Stan and I early on. And when Stan said he was going to go to Bible college and was going to quit his job, I had to come to grips with what that would mean for us financially.
Yeah.
And I remember telling him, if we have to eat cabbage soup for every meal, you know, because cabbage was cheap at the time, it's not anymore. we'll make whatever sacrifices we need to make that happen. It never happened. It just, like, God, you know, that's the thing. It's when you step into that faith space and you trust God with your finances and stuff and you turn loose of it. I had somebody tell me once, Dana, you're doing this and you need to do this. He was talking about something else, but it works with finance too. Mm. But we see God look after us in a different way than we would if we're trying to do it all on our own. And see, that's the crux of why we talk about this.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
So essentially, when we're talking about finance, when we're talking about giving, we're talking about a heart position.
Yeah.
We're talking about a confidence in God. Mm. And by the way, confidence in God can just be called faith.
That's a good word. It should catch on.
Yeah, I like it.
Could you put that in one of your letters to the editor? That'd be great. Yeah. Remember this, whosoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and who sows generously will also reap generously, 2 Corinthians 9:6. Lots of people have used that. What does it mean to you, Pastor Dick?
Well, I mean, it goes back to the thing that I noticed when I was doing my preparation for a Sunday sermon was about the offerings, and a lot of it's talking about bring your grain and your harvest to the storehouse, because it was more of an agrarian society, right?
Okay? I'm looking forward to the Sunday where someone goes, here's some chickens.
You have to go to a different continent for that, I think. But anyway,
I bought my best chicken. Why doesn't it fit in the offering basket?
But you know, if you look at principally, it was about the best, the first fruits, or whatever is what it was. But with it stands to reason with when you're talking about agrarian society, the more you sow, the bigger harvest you're going to have, right? Okay, so it's that rules of reaping and sowing and reaping, right? So sparingly, and I think it was literal, but principally transfers across to whether it's time or resources and
time,
stuff like
talent,
that.
Time, talent, treasure. Yeah.
That God sees the heart that it's given with, and God blesses that. It may come from a different direction. Just because you sowed corn, you know, we can reap soybeans. I don't know. That doesn't work that way.
The agrarian analogy is now ruined. But
you give here and God blesses over here. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, look, to me it does, and I think what I would put out as an apologetic is when I use that scripture, we're not talking about if you give $10, you'll get $100 in return, because that's kind of the lotto approach. That's kind of the Tats Lotto approach. if you take a chance. And what I think it's important to say to people, this is not chance. This is faithful giving. It's developing who you are. The other element that you pointed out is it could all go away in a breath as well.
Yeah.
So the physicality of the stuff is much less important than the internal change that's happening and the generosity of heart that's actually happening there. So the generosity is there is what I pick up on. I think generosity begets generosity. When you talk about your example of Stan going to college and quitting his job and the earnings go down and you think cabbage soup, the generosity that you experienced, I'm guessing, probably had something to do with the community that you were in.
Yeah, well, you know, and an example from those days, Stan needed a pair of shoes and we couldn't afford a pair of shoes.
I still think he needs a pair, but anyway.
And, you know, he needed something that he could wear with a suit, and somebody in the church died. And guess what they left him?
No, they didn't.
I'm telling you, they didn't. They were fancy cowboy boots too, which was kind of funny, really, because it's like, oh, yeah. And you know, you wear a dead man's boots. But
I don't have a sound effect. I don't have a sound effect for that. I don't. Okay, moving on.
But it was God's provision for a need that we had in a very, you know, sad but, you know, helpful way.
roundabout kind of way. No, I've got friends that, you know, again, they've come into an inheritance or something like that, and it's actually allowed them to change a direction in their life and do the next thing and all those sorts of things. So when it comes to the emotional part of it, because again, I want to get back to the heart of it. You've actually sent out. By the way, people can access all of these things on the WBC Church app. You can look at the notes. You can also we've got some what we call life group notes that go out, and you can run a little Bible study that Pastor D's put together as well. We'd be happy to send those to you as well. What are you hoping that people learn in this moment? Because what I understood from your Sunday message that you prepared was at the end you forgot to say, and by the way, give us all your money. Like you forgot, like you'd done all of that hard work and then you didn't land the sale.
Yeah. I'm not a very good salesperson. Really, you know what? I've been thinking about this since then too. And the word that comes to mind is financial freedom. And often what we think of when we think of financial freedom is that we have enough so that we can do whatever we want. We can go on the cruise. We can retire early. We can, you know, do all that stuff. Financial freedom, our mortgage is paid off. That's what we think of.
Yeah,
I think from a biblical standpoint, financial freedom is loosening the grip money has on you and finding that freedom from that anxiety and freedom from the worry and concern that comes about that, you know, how are we going to do this? I know that before our kids, we had four kids, two girls. In history, the bride's parents paid for the wedding.
Right.
Now, I know it's not quite that way anymore, but that's what was in the back of my mind. I'm thinking, how on earth are we going to pay for two weddings?
Mm.
We got through all four weddings in less than 4 years, and which was something in itself. And we didn't go into debt for that. And I look at that, and of course, somebody said, oh, you had homemade weddings. And, well, we did.
Yeah.
Because we were willing, and our kids were very understanding about that. But the thing that it just like, you know, I worried about that, and I didn't need to. I didn't need to, because God made it work out. He always seems to make it work out. And so having that freedom from that anxiety and worrying about how are we going to pay for that or how is that going to work, it's that taking it to God in prayer and waiting for Him to provide, because He promises that He will.
Yeah.
Yeah, and He does it in different ways sometimes and stuff like that, and that doesn't mean that you're always going to have what you need when you think you need it. But at the end of the day, you know, knowing that He is caring for you relieves a lot of tension.
The idea that God's timing is perfect always messes with our head, especially when He's not on time for us. But what I would say is that over the years, as I've met people with money and without money, sometimes I have struggled to speak to either end of that spectrum, because all of us think where we are is harder than where the other person is.
Sure.
And so putting yourself in that space of, if God is God across all of creation, then the person who is wealthy in your eyes has the same needs as the person who is poor in your eyes. And so we bring them. I love this. You used it in the devotional this week from 2 Corinthians 8. It says, in the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity.
We don't expect that, do we?
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, yeah.
That rich generosity could come out of overwhelming severe trials. But this idea, the overflowing joy and their extreme poverty combined to create rich generosity. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, it's more blessed to give than receive, Justin.
It really, really is. Yeah. Well, thank you for giving us some of your time today, Pastor D. Very much appreciated.
My pleasure.
And producer Simon.
Yes.
Would you like to announce your new charity that you're starting?
Oh, it'll be the 50,001th in Australia, I believe.
Yes. Oh,
No, I don't have one.
50,000.
50,000 nonprofits in Australia.
50,000 nonprofits in a country of 25 million people.
So if you gave each of them a dollar each, that's 50 grand.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's true.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I there's a whole other discussion there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Hang on. Let's just restart the podcast. So you 50,000, how many of those do you give to? How many charities do you give to?
Oh, regularly none.
Yeah. Oh, so you don't have one that you specifically give to all the time?
We would do church giving.
Yep.
And then over and above to specific needs, which is very popular.
Yeah, okay. So that's the most popular one at the moment?
Like Method?
Method?
Yeah, it's the one that's trending in the the Gen Zs and the whatever.
Are D&I not cool by giving to the same charity every month? Are we not cool anymore?
You're pretty cool to that charity.
Yeah. But we're not hip to the vibe of what the kids are doing now.
What the kids are doing.
Yeah.
Okay. And where it's headed, I guess.
Yeah. So where do you think it's headed? Go on. Here's the prediction.
More on-demand asking, and that adds to the noise, which is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. All the people that are asking is for money because they know that people give on the need.
GoFundMe, is that?
Well, kind of, yeah. It's like GoFundMe for charities, yeah.
How many GoFundMes do you get every single day?
A lot.
Yeah, but it is hard in that space, isn't it? Because everybody has a genuine, like most people I find when they put up a GoFundMe, there's a genuine need. I got a friend who's going through, unfortunately, a third round of cancer now. 2 years ago, they did a big GoFundMe and then they did a concert for him. And, you know, it's hard because the need hasn't gone away because the illness hasn't gone away and it keeps sort of raising its head. And then there's all sorts of other things that we give to, and it's a struggle. But the research is telling you that the current generation is more likely to give into one-offs like that.
Yes. So put the call out, the advocacy, the cause. Yep.
There you go.
So the noisier the charity, the better, which ironically means they generally spend more money to be noisier.
That's true.
It's a vicious circle.
And again, when I was working in the NGOs, the hard thing was to prove to your fund base, your giving base, that you weren't spending more than a certain percentage on staffing, promotions, all those sorts of things, which is a tremendously difficult thing to prove, especially when you're a smaller charity versus a larger charity where the percentages look different but the money's more.
Right.
So,
and that's where the stories kick in, which you touched on earlier on.
Yeah.
Is that your sale point is success.
Yeah.
And so then there's you need to tell the stories.
But I think, again, if we could bring that whole thought into what we were speaking about here, this is the spiritual discipline of giving that we've been talking about, not necessarily the emotional response, which is just a charitable mindset.
Yep.
So the difference being that we've talked about through this whole series, we've talked about habits, the habit of gathering, the habit of prayer, the habit of serving, and in this one, the habit of giving. Mm. And so again, as much as maybe that's a good place to sort of bring it full circle, is we are talking about something that's much more disciplined than just we're gonna wait until enough noise is created. So again, what's done in secret, right?
That's the kind
of thing. Yeah. Is that a better place to finish it?
Sure.
Okay. We've officially done better now. See, I just like that. I was thinking you could start your own charity.
I like how you gave a little bit more there.
We're almost done.
You gave a little bit more. Well done.
Ladies and gentlemen, episode 16 of The Elaborators is probably done. Are we sure?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I've tried to finish it a couple of times now. It's like my dad's sermons. They always finished four times. Plus altar calls. Love you, Dad. Thanks to Pastor D for hanging out with us and for bringing the message. And also to Simon.
Most welcome.
For being part of another generation of cool hipsters. If you'd like to know more, get in touch with simonneedsmoney.com.
Yep, I'll start a GoFundMe.
Love you all. See you next week. God bless. This is the dancing bit.
Oh, we've got a few seconds left. A
few seconds of dancing.
Get some of those 90s fresh dance moves.
Bye.